letting me present here today. I'm very new to this community. I just joined McMaster about 7 months ago. So I have to confess that most of the results I'm going to show today are not even obtained from Shark Network. But still, I hope that it's going to be a very nice representation of at least part of the research activities we have here in this community. So most of my research involves applying high performance computing in problem science and the complex fluid flows. Since the previous speaker has just gave a very nice speech about problem science, I feel that it's very appropriate for me to talk about the other side of my research interest, that's in the complex fluid mechanics. So specifically, my topic today is going to involve the turbulent flows of problem solutions. Since we have a very diverse audience today, let me start with the very basics about turbulent flows. We hear the word turbulence all the time. We know that turbulent flows are all around us. I'm just randomly putting together several random pictures of turbulent flows around us. And what do we mean by turbulent flows? It actually will take a lot of courage for me to even put a definition on turbulence, because whichever way I try to define it, I'm sure someone in the turbulence community is going to disagree with me. So let me instead just go as far as describing that turbulent flow is the flow state which is characterized by strong velocity fluctuations and chaotic flow patterns. So as engineers, we are often introduced to turbulent flows through this classic set of experiments. Basically, it's a pipe flow, and you inject a stream of dye into the pipe flow. And you look at how the pattern of the dye evolves as we increase the Reynolds number. And for a pipe flow, the simplest way of increasing Reynolds number is to increase the flow rate. So at the lowest possible Reynolds number, we can the fluid elements in the pipe flow basically follow straight lines, so the pattern of the dye is totally smooth. We call it a laminar flow. Then when we increase the flow rate or the Reynolds number, the patterns start to become more disordered, disturbance start kicking, and eventually we end up with a fully developed turbulent flow. So why do we care about turbulent flows? There can be a whole range of reasons. In this presentation, we are concerned with the fluid transportation applications. So if you open up any fluid dynamics textbook, you are going to find a plot like this. What it basically says is that when you transition from a laminar flow into a turbulent flow, the friction factor suddenly jumps up. That means that the energy dissipation rate in a turbulent flow is much, much higher than in a laminar flow. And or put it in another word, turbulence is a very inefficient way, energy-wise, to transport fluids. More intuitively, that also means that under the same pressure gradient, you are going to get a much lower flow rate in a turbulent flow compared with a laminar flow. So how do we reduce energy consumption in a turbulent fluid transport has been a constant interest, because it is almost impossible to keep the flow in the laminar state in most of the applications we are interested in. One of the simplest way we can do, and people have found this since the Second World War, is that you only need to dissolve a little bit of polymer additives into the fluid, and that's going to reduce the friction drag dramatically. So basically, that means that the flow rate you are going to achieve in a polymer solution is going to be higher than that of a Newtonian fluid or fluid without polymers. There are several very interesting facts about this polymer-induced drag reduction effect. One is that it only takes a very low amount of polymer to achieve significant effects, typically in the order of 10 to 100 parts per million. And the level of drag reduction you can achieve can be as high as 80%. That translates to a lot of energy saving in fluid transportation applications. And one of the best known early examples of commercial application is in the oil transport of the Trans-Alaska pipeline systems. But other than the application interest, this problem has also been interesting because of its theoretical significance, because it sits right at the interface between two very important research fields, one in turbulence, the other in polymer physics. So study of this problem has attracted attention from researchers from both sides. And since this is a high-performance computing forum, let's first start look at how do we simulate the turbulent flow of a polymer solution. So in this study, we are going to focus on a channel flow. Basically, the fluid is sandwiched between two parallel plates, and it is pushed, the flow is driven by a constant pressure gradient. And the momentum and, sorry. The momentum and mass balance is going to give us the Navier-Stokes equation from which we can solve for the velocity and pressure fields. And the polymer effects are captured by the so-called Fini-Peak constitutive equation, in which polymer molecules are modeled as a finitely extensible nonlinear elastic. That's what Fini stands for, dumbbells. And what this equation is going to give us is a conformation tensor that describes the configuration of polymer molecules in the flow field, and we call this alpha tensor. And if we couple these two equations, solve them together, these two equations are going to be determined by four independent non-dimensional parameters. So for this presentation, I'm only going to discuss the dependence of the results on the last parameter here, the Weissenberg number. What it basically describes is how elastic the fluid becomes when we introduce polymer, or in a less rigorous way, that's how strong the polymer effects are. And Weissenberg equals zero will correspond to the Newtonian fluid. And direct numerical simulation of this equation system has been shown to successfully reproduce almost all of the key observations people have found in experiments. For example, here, plotting here are basically the mean velocity profiles for a range of different Weissenberg numbers. What we see is that starting from a Newtonian flow, and as we increase the Weissenberg number, as we have stronger polymer presence, the profiles are moving upwards. That means that we are getting higher and higher flow rate, or that means that our simulation is capturing the drag-reducing effect of polymers in the turbulent flow. And to understand where this drag-reducing effect comes from, we should also look at what's the configuration of polymer molecules in this flow field. So plotting here are basically profiles of the trace of the alpha tensor. Basically, it measures the extent by how much polymers are being stretched by the turbulent flow field. And what we see is that as Weissenberg number increases, polymers are becoming more and more stretched by the flow field. So a very simplified picture is that the polymer chains are stretched by the flow field. The polymer chains has a strong tendency to retract back. And this retracting action is going to exert a stress on the flow field. And this stress is going to suppress turbulent flow motions and cause drag reduction. Of course, there are several. Of course, when it comes to how specifically the stress causes turbulent suppression, there are several competing theories, which I'm not going into the details, because my focus today is actually on another arguably more intriguing problem in this field. And this problem is called maximum drag reduction, or MDR. So in the 1970s, Professor Virk at MIT basically summarized a whole range of experimental results in this area into this simple chart, which plots basically the flow rate versus the Reynolds number. And if you have a Newtonian fluid, the turbulent measurement is going to give you this red line. And when you add polymer into the fluid, and we know that polymer can increase the flow rate, so basically those lines are going to take a high slope here. These are polymer solutions. And you can imagine that naturally when you introduce more and more polymer into the system, you can get a higher and higher flow rate. But what is really intriguing, and people do not understand why, is that all these different experiments with totally different pipes and totally different polymer solutions are bounded by the same universal upper bound. We call it maximum drag reduction, or MDR. This magic upper bound is universal in the sense that it does not depend on any property related with the polymers. You change the chemical structure of the polymer you use, you change the molecular weight, you change the concentration. No matter what you do, you hit the exact same asymptote. So since its initial discovery, this MDR has remained the most important unsolved problem in viscoelastic turbulence. There are still several questions. There are already several characteristics we know about this MDR. One of the best known is that if we take any measurements along this asymptote, we plot the mean velocity profiles, no matter which point you take, you are going to get the same magical log-log relationship. We call it the Virk MDR profile. And this log-log relationship has widely been accepted as a quantitative identifier for this maximum drag reduction phenomena. And if we also look further into the details of the flow field, so these are basically the DNS results of the flow field. Plotting here are the magnitude of the streamwise velocities. and compare that, the Newtonian turbulent flow with that close to MDR, what we see is drastic different flow field structures. Basically, when you're at MDR, the flow structures are becoming much smoother, elongated along the flow direction. And another thing to note is that even the polymers, even the turbulence has been strongly suppressed by polymer at MDR. The flow is still very much turbulent. There are still a lot of flow instability going on in this state. And it is far from anywhere close to the lambda state. So to understand this phenomenon of MDR, there are several important questions we need to answer. The foremost is, we know that polymer can suppress turbulent flows, but why is it not able to completely kill turbulence and bring the flow back to lambda state? Why it converts into somewhere in the middle called MDR? The second is that, why is this state universal? It is very counterintuitive because typically we're dealing with highly elastic polymer solutions. Why does the property of the polymer molecule not affect the measurement we have at this MDR state? This is very surprising. Also, what determines the flow difference in the flow structure we observe here? Understanding these questions are not only interesting physically, but they are also important practically because eventually we know that we cannot put polymer into any fluid. So eventually what we want to do is we want to learn from how polymer did the trick, and we want to come up with a way that we can engineer turbulence to achieve a similar or even higher level of drag reduction in the turbulent flow without having to add polymers. So to answer this question, we use a very simple numerical trick called the mineral flow unit. So for those of you who are not experts in turbulent simulation, that basically means that we numerically isolate the dominant structures that determine the self-sustaining dynamics of turbulent flows. So basically, typically these kind of structures look like this in a Newtonian flow. It's dominated by parallel streamwise vortices showing red here. And between the vortices, there is typically a wavy shaped velocity streak. And this kind of structure is known to be self-sustaining in turbulent flow motions. And you are going to see these pictures for a few times throughout the speech. And if we keep track of the evolution of one of these structures as a function of time, and we plot several quantities, time series of several quantities, we are interested in for turbulent study. For the time being, let's just focus on the first quantity we have here. This is basically the slope of the mean velocity profile we measure at different time points. And what we see here is that this signal, for the majority of time, this signal fluctuates around a quantity that we typically expect for a Newtonian flow in a Newtonian simulation, which is very much expected. But another thing to note here is that if you run a simulation long enough, you are going to see several of these rare but very strange events during which this signal strongly deviates from the Newtonian limit and sometimes even approaching the limit of maximum drag reduction. And for the time being, let's just put a label on these events, and I'll explain the label later on. And we call these events hibernating turbulence. And we call the rest of the more regular intervals active turbulence. And now if we look at the simulation result of a high Weissmann number polymer solution, what we see is the transition between these two states become much more frequent. Very often, the signal is simply jumping back and forth between these two limits. So what do we actually mean by hibernating turbulence? So let's answer this question by simply looking at the the flow field within one of the typical hibernating interval. So I realize I have too much information that I can explain in this video. So what I would like to do is that when I start to play the video, I would like you to focus on the evolution of the flow structures while also paying attention to the corresponding mean velocity profile corresponding to each of the flow structure. So at the beginning of the video, the flow state is in an active state, but soon after that, you start to see hibernation start kicking, and the vortices are being strongly suppressed, and the flow field become very much elongated and smooth, and which is something we also observe in maximum drag reduction. And as the system is deep into hibernation, you can see that the mean velocity profile well approaches the magic log law we talk about that defines the maximum drag reduction. And the system basically stays in this state for a while, but eventually new disturbance is growing up and the strongly unstable active turbulence is recovered. So basically, these so-called hibernating intervals are in a period during which the turbulent flow enters a state of very weak activity for a long period of time. And it stays there for a while, but eventually it's going to be waking up and return to the active state. So far we have already observed many similarities between this intermittent phenomena, so-called hibernating turbulence, we have observed, and the maximum dry direction that we are trying to understand. We have shown that the mean velocity provides quantitatively approach to that of MGR during the hibernating turbulence. We have shown that there are many similarities in the flow structures. If we compare these two flow structures here, both hibernating turbulence and MGR are characterized by very smooth elongated structures with very weak vortex motions. And what I do not have time to show is that there are also a lot of similarities between these two states in terms of the velocity fluctuations and the turbulence statistics. So this suggests that in order to understand maximum dry direction, the key seems to lie in this phenomena, so-called turbulence hibernation. And earlier on, we have shown that when we add a polymer into a turbulent flow, its role is to increase the frequency of transition towards this hibernating turbulence. We can further quantify this effect by basically measuring the average time scales of these intervals. So showing here in blue is basically the average duration of each active interval. And what we see is that as Weissman increases, this average duration of active turbulence becomes much, much shorter, one order of magnitude shorter than the Newtonian limit at the high Weissman limit. By sharp contrast, the average duration of hibernating interval is almost invariant as we increase the Weissman number. So this suggests that although polymer has a very strong effect in suppressing active states of turbulence, it does not seem to affect the hibernating states at all. And this, together with many other evidence I don't have time to show, indicates that, hibernating turbulence is indeed a fundamentally Newtonian structure. This structure that we think has a lot of connection with maximum dry direction is fundamentally Newtonian. And this is very encouraging because that means that if we know how polymer pushes the flow into this state, it is possible that we can get into that state with a polymer, without polymer as well. And the combined effect of these two timescales is that overall, at high Weissman number for highly elastic fluids, these hibernating intervals takes up a much higher fraction in the overall statistics you measure in the flow field. Therefore, the statistics you measure will show more characteristics of hibernating turbulence or more like MDR as the Weissman number increases. So to understand why polymer does not affect these intervals, we can look at the polymer deformation in these two limits. At the active limits, the polymers are strongly stretched, and the polymer stretching also fluctuates a lot. That means that there are a lot of polymer dynamics going on at this limit. But at the hibernating limit, the polymer deformation is consistently low. So the reason why polymer cannot affect these so-called hibernating interval is because during these intervals, the turbulent motion is so weak that polymer cannot be sufficiently stretched. Without strong polymer deformation, there will not be a lot of polymer stress. That's the reason why it is not having a feedback on the fluid dynamics. So if we connect all this information together, we come up with this very simple physical model. So we can roughly divide all the turbulent structures into two classes. One is the strong turbulence called active turbulence. The other is the weak turbulence called hibernating turbulence. They occur in both Newtonian and polymer solutions. And when we have polymers are strongly stretched in active intervals. So the strongly stretched polymer is going to exert stress on active intervals, and it's going to suppress these intervals, make them shorter, and push the flow down to hibernation. And once we reach this weak state of turbulence, polymer relaxes, so it does not affect fluid dynamics anymore. So the hibernating turbulence of a polymer solution behaves very much like a Newtonian fluid. So after a certain amount of time, a new cycle of active turbulence is going to kick in. And as we increase the Weissman number, the frequency of these transitions become much, much higher. And eventually, our projection is that we can reach the so-called MDR state when this hibernating interval becomes the overwhelming majority in the statistics. Therefore, when you do any average measurement of the turbulent flow field, it's going to show the characteristic of these states. So in the interest of time, I'm going to skip this, and I jump to my summary slide. And thank you much for your attention.
Gilles, thank you, Professor Chi, for his very interesting talk. We do have time for a few quick questions. Do we have any?
Hi, can you please give us some insight of how the computer simulation that you're doing will affect the ultimate physical results and how that'll translate into what you talked about as the benefit of lower energy to transport fluids?
I think in terms of how the computing I'm doing is contributed to the physical insights we're getting, I think it is very important to point out that compared with experiments, there are a lot of things we can do computationally. For example, in experiments, there's still no efficient way to get real-time information about the polymer stress evolved in time. The measurement of turbulent flow field has been very much developed. You can get a very accurate information about the flow velocity fields in a turbulence flow, but there's still no effective way you can get all the information on the dynamics of polymers. And that's the information so far we can only achieve for computationally. And this information plays a crucial role in helping us getting all the understanding we are getting today. But in terms of delineating the interactions between the turbulence and polymer physics. Another thing to notice that is that in order to get the physical understanding of what we are getting here, we need to effectively isolate one of the turbulent structures basically out of the whole field of them with millions of these vortex structures. And this is, again, something that we cannot get experimentally. And the kind of physical understanding is eventually going to lead to some new ideas about how do we engineer turbulence without polymer. And these kind of new ideas can be first tested computationally before we put it into experiments. Thank you.
Okay, so we have time for only one more question.
The flow that you're simulating, is it effectively 2D or 3D?
It's three-dimensional.
Okay.
Okay, we have time for a third question.
Thank you. So continuing with the previous question, which kind of technique do you use actually to simulate? Do you use a hydrocode? Do you use the smooth particle hydrodynamics? And according to that, how do you include the effect of the real viscosity?
Sorry, I cannot hear the question.
How do you include the effect of real viscosity in the techniques that you use?
Are you asking about the effect of viscosity in the? I didn't mention that. So basically, the system we look at are highly, highly dilute. So it's only with like 10 or 100 parts per million of polymer. That means that if you measure the shear viscosity of the fluid, it's almost identical to Newtonian fluid. So there's almost no viscosity effect here. What is happening here is that in addition to viscosity, polymer also introduces elasticity into fluid, and it's the elasticity that's causing all these effects we're discussing here.
Okay. So let's thank our speaker again.
Thank you.